You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
You're listening to the Stable Management Podcast, where we discuss the barn management topics that you're passionate about.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Stable Management Podcast. Our goal is to bring you a real-world look into the parts of horse farm management that you love or hate most, such as stall bedding, farm equipment, and pasture maintenance. During each bi-monthly episode, we'll be joined by an expert guest who shares their experiences with and perspectives on an important stable management topic.
Do you enjoy the Stable Management Podcast? Want to learn even more about horse healthcare? Get your management and industry questions answered at Ask the Horse Live, a free audio event available exclusively from thehorse.com. Each Ask the Horse Live episode focuses on a specific equine healthcare topic chosen by our editors. We gather leading veterinarians, researchers, and industry experts to tackle your toughest questions. You can also hear on-demand episodes of Ask the Horse on thehorse.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm your host, Haley Peffer, and my guest today is Gerald Jackson, equine manager with Terry Bradshaw Quarter Horses. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It's my pleasure.
So our topic today is one that I personally am very excited about because I know very little about the quarter horse world. So we're going to be talking about managing a breeding farm and more specifically a quarter horse breeding farm. So could you just start off by telling us what your typical day looks like, especially during peak breeding season versus the off season?
Okay. Well, my day generally starts out between 4:30 and 5 o'clock in the morning when I go through and turn the lights on and walk through the studs. I walk through the mare barn, checking all the mares in the barn, in the stalls, walk through the show barn, making sure that everything's up and running and eating already. We feed in the show barn at 4:30. And then I drive around on our roads with spotlights and check for anything out of the normal in the pasture. If a mare's off by herself or where my mares are off grazing or they are sleeping, what they're doing. So I have an understanding of how my herd is reacting to the weather or climate, nutritional needs. If they're all hanging around the feed bunk, just sleeping or taking a break, I feel like I'm managing their nutritional needs. If they're off grazing and I start looking for the reason why, is something wrong in the pasture, is something stirred them up. So that's kind of how our day starts. Every morning, then on breeding days, our staff gets here at 6 o'clock to start feeding, and we start trying to collect stallions around 7 o'clock, with the entire morning being devoted to stallion collection and processing, where the shipping boxes can be ready to ship out no later than 1 o'clock. Any on-farm pickups are at 1 o'clock. And that's kind of how our day starts off, and then we have all the rest of the ranch to manage besides just the breeding operation that morning.
Does your day look any different when you're kind of in the off season for breeding?
My day normally doesn't. The staff here, they come to work at 7 o'clock and then they go through the entire process of feeding and any kind of meds that need to be given. But they're normally off breeding season is at 7 o'clock. Collection days are at 6, but my days always start early because we like to get an early start. And I truly like to watch my horses get up, stretch, see how they're acting, because that gives you a pretty good template or an idea of how your horse is going to feel that day. They get up and stretch and walk over to the stall to get petted or to talk to you. You feel pretty good about that horse's doing everything it needs to do.
Definitely, yeah. And could you tell our listeners, for people who might not know, roughly how many horses you guys have on the farm and then how many employees you have to manage those?
Roughly right now, we have right at 150 head. My wife's telling me we're pushing 200 right now with all the foals on the ground. We have myself, then Kate's the breeding manager that handles all the paperwork. Then I have a stallion manager. I have two people assigned to the baby and foaling process and one young lady that's responsible for the mare. I have four other hourly cleaners, helpers, feeders. And that's pretty much it.
Okay. That's quite the operation that you guys have going on. I can imagine that keeps you quite busy. So can you walk us through how you align your breeding program with maybe current trends in the show industry, which we know can kind of change a little bit over time, while still maintaining the long-term health of your horses and their value as well?
Oh, that's kind of a loaded question. The industry follows a pretty hard line on the futurity right now with the Breeders Halter Futurity and the WCHA and the Supreme Championship. Now the Congress is involved in the futurity aspect. The main emphasis for several years was on the babies, and now we're starting to drive that to older horses. The Congress this year or last year started a maiden yearling futurity, which made it major breeders be able to let that baby grow up and become a mature horse before you ever showed it. And we're seeing the BHF and the WCHA is putting more emphasis on that, along with dividing your babies and yearlings into multiple divisions, with the WCHA doing a senior, a median, and a junior in the weanling divisions, and then in the yearling divisions doing a junior and senior. So we're adding more longevity to our horses that way, and then there's more money being added towards our older horses into the 2 and 3 year olds. And that kind of keeps the value of your horse. If your horse is not that one that thrives as a baby or it's a late baby, you can let it grow out and you don't have to push it. And they don't always have to be, not every baby, not every horse is going to be well 24/7, 365 days a year. And some of them just need a little time to get their act together, if you would. So that helps us as horse managers or basically babysitters of our herd to give that strong, mature horse a chance to go, but that younger horse somewhere else to go later in life. And that helps protect our health of our young horses and the longevity of our older horses. Because I really like the yearling maiden futurities, both at the WCHA in May and at the Congress, because these horses have never been shown before at all. And I do think that protects our value and our overall long-term health of our horse.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's so important. Can you walk us through your approach when you're selecting stallions and mares, and just tell us a little bit about what traits or bloodlines you might be prioritizing at a certain time?
A lot of the approach for us is the double registered for the individual that can show multiple times and multiple breeds is one of the check box that we like to check off. I like to breed more phenotypical to try to make that quality cross based on what the horse is and what I can change and what this stallion does or what that mare does. And then I'm becoming, the older I get, more of a believer in the grand dam or that anchor point in that pedigree, both top and bottom, but primarily for me, it's probably the bottom and then anchor point in that pedigree, because most of your production type animals, market animals, are going to go back to that same philosophy with that anchor point. And that's how I start out. And then long term in the industry, you start to learn what certain crosses will give you and what they won't give you. And then you add that into another category of, you know, is it a slow maturing horse? It's a fast maturing horse. How you can best match that up along with your mare. Is that mare a great mother? Can she produce a bunch of milk? Is she good, easy to handle? Well, you know, takes care of her baby, lets you do anything you want to with that baby, have it halter broke, leading by itself, and the mare is well tempered and mannered. That has a lot to do with it too. And that's kind of how we start making our crosses. And then, you know, as always, you know, one cross is always going to work better than the other. year after year. So we try to create that best product every time, because I am a firm believer that every mare has a great cross in her. It's up to us as professionals of the industry to find that cross and use the proper stallion. No matter if we own it or somebody else owns it, we have to be good stewards and make that proper cross.
Yeah, what a great way to put that. And I think that really applies to any type of horse that you're breeding. It could be thoroughbreds or English sport horses too.
Yes, and that's our job, because is not to take a cheap shot, but you can breed a world champion to a world champion, and it might not be a world champion in that category, but that doesn't mean that it's not a quality animal that you need to find. And the prime example I can use is my pony horse that I use at all the major shows is out of a world champion halter stallion, producing stallion, and a world champion producing mare. And he didn't have the quality to be a halter horse, but he's probably one of the best pony horses that we have in the industry right now. He's very solid. And so it was up to the horsemen that were involved in his life to define that quality and bring it to the surface.
Do you enjoy the Stable Management Podcast? Want to learn even more about horse healthcare? Get your management and industry questions answered at Ask the Horse Live, a free audio event available exclusively from thehorse.com. Each Ask the Horse Live episode focuses on a specific equine healthcare topic chosen by our editors. We gather leading veterinarians, researchers, and industry experts to tackle your toughest questions. You can also hear on-demand episodes of Ask the Horse on thehorse.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I'm going to ask you another possibly loaded question, because it sounds like you guys have a lot to manage over there. Could you tell us how you manage your reproductive timelines, especially with veterinary coordination, and then also record keeping when you have so many horses to manage?
Every person that works for us has access to Wise Options, and we added Wise Options about 5 years ago, 2 years ago. And they can download mare records off their phones or look at the mare records on their phones. Then the next part of that is you have to be, as a manager, able to look into the future and what I need to get done in November to set my mares up properly for breeding season in February for dry mares. And you also have to remember when your mares are supposed to foal and feed them accordingly in the last trimester. You can't wait till a week before she foals to think you need to start increasing her food. It takes a lot of time management and herd management to set these things up and make them work properly, along with proper worming to make sure that you're not feeding parasites. Really big on worming my horses, keeping them clean, because I don't want to feed a parasite. And that's how we manage the timeline with the Wise Options. And then we go a little bit old school, where we start our light program in November, not in December. So we want that mare to already go through her first transitional heat. Of course, in our area that we're operating in, because of the climate, we don't have a lot of anestrus. So we try to keep them always cycling. And then we've started using the Equiloom mask. We use the lighting program. And the old concept is, if the mare's under lights, you need to be able to sit in that stall and read a black and white newspaper in that stall. And that way you have the quality light in that stall. That is the best fundamental practice on lights. I have been very happy with Equiloom and what they've done for us and our paddocks this year with non-lights. And that's a new avenue that we're approaching or tried this year. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to do it, but the simple factor is you can't wait till the start of breeding season to start setting your herd up timeline-wise. It has to start in November, December. We follow we do 15 days to regulate on our dry mares and synchronize them you're not going to get all of them, but if I can get 80% of our dry mare herd exposed on a set time frame, because as a breeding operation standing horses to the outside public, we know the trends of when people, when the outside customers are going to start calling for semen, and it's good customer service if we're not trying to cover our mares when we're trying to cover outside mares.
Definitely, yeah.
Veterinary coordination is the same. They call us, most of the veterinaries call us probably a week before they're going to need semen to make sure that they are familiar on how our shipping requirements work, as far as call the night before, get on the list. It doesn't cost anything to cancel the day of collection, whether they're going to fly, whether it's going to FedEx, or whether it's a pickup here at the ranch. And that's kind of how we do it.
Yeah, we've had another guest on the podcast to talk about problem brood mares. And something that I heard consistently from her was the same thing you're saying. You can't wait until you're ready to breed the mare to pull her out and start looking at her. You need to prepare her months in advance.
Months in advance.
So I'm glad you echoed that to remind people. So for those mares that you are able to successfully get in foal, could you tell us then down the road what your foaling management protocol looks like from monitoring those mares when they're getting close to foaling and then handling those first 24 to 48 hours or so after birth?
Okay. 2 years ago, we decided to start a concept. So when that mare goes in her last trimester, we made a numerical chart from 0 to 5. And that chart consisted of vulva, the size of her vulva, the size of her bag, the droopiness of her flanks, if she was carrying it deep in her belly, has it risen into her flanks, and was her across her butt, was it firm or soft? So when, you know, in her abdomen, where she carried that baby. So every day they go out there and checked how the mare looked, and you start off at 0. And as those mares progress in their last trimester, you'll see changes, you know, and then when they start making a bag, if they just start making a bag, it'd go to a 1. So we start charting those mares that way, and that gives us a pretty good idea how that mare's progressing. So if you have a maiden mare or any mare, we'll just pick on a maiden mare, and she go out there one day and she's gone from a 0 to a 4 on bag size, or she's gone from a 0 to a 4 or a 3 on dilation in her vulva, those are the things you need to be picking up on. So, you know, is she close? Do we bring her in the barn? Do we wait another day? And that's how we started assessing our pre-foal management on those mares. Once they get to that category where they're into that net, we think they're 5 days away from foaling, they come into the barn. We use foal alert here, and we go ahead and put the foal alert in the mare. Then she stays in a stall. We have the foal alert, and we also have ring cameras on our stalls. And then she goes into the next phase of her cycle to get ready to foal. Now, once the foal alert goes off or she starts to get ready to foal, it's going to alert us. I do believe it's my obligation to make sure that baby gets here on the ground and is safe and the mare is safe. She's up. She's all okay. The baby's up. And then I turn it over to another staff member to make sure the baby stands and nurses, because it's not the actual foaling process. It wears you out. It's if you have to check those mares every hour on the hour waiting for them to foal, it wears you out during foaling season. So everybody's dedicated to, we have dedicated people that respond to the foal alert. And then once the foal is born, we're going to worm the mare with Ivomec. We found that does help us with our foal heat scours. And then we're probably going to give the mare a shot of Bantamine to help with pain, any related symptoms to external cramps, and if we need to give her some ACE in the muscle to help her come into more milk, that's fine. We're going to tie up the placenta to make sure she doesn't step on it. While that's going on, the baby will have its navel dipped. It'll be a navel clamp put on it. And then we're going to doctor that baby according with penicillin, penicillin and a jump start. And we're going to give it oral selenium. The thing that we use on our babies is called Nursemate. I went completely blank on that. And then we'll give, once the baby gets through all that, and then once it starts moving around, then we'll give it an enema, and then we wait for it to nurse, stand up and nurse. And at 12 hours, we go through and give it another half tube of Kickstart. We dip the navel again, and then we do our chip. We implant a chip to take their temperature and an ID chip. We get the weight of the baby. We pull the hair for the DNA. And that's when we start, and we pull blood for IgG. And if the IgG is less than green, less than 1,000, then we'll run plasma. And we run our own plasma, and we do a 2-bag plasma protocol on anything under 1,000.
Okay. I love the system of the scoring system for your mares. I think that's so helpful, especially when you have so many mares and many people looking at them. I feel like it must really help everybody to stay on the same page.
Well, I can go through and look at, if I'm not here and I'm at a horse show or somewhere, then I can come in at night and look at that record and see if this mare is progressing, if she's not progressing. If I have one that's not progressing as fast as I think she should due to her foaling date, then you can go out there and reassess, are we not meeting her nutritional needs? Is there something else wrong? Do we need to help her with her nutritional needs? Do we need to give her something to help with her bag production? And that's being more proactive than reactive. It's very important to be proactive, not reactive.
Definitely, yeah. So speaking of these systems that you have in place, could you tell us about some of the biggest challenges that you face on a breeding farm of this size and how you've adapted your systems to handle this?
The biggest challenges for a breeding farm. Herd health is probably our biggest challenge. We're very, very cautious on changing stalls on mares and babies, because when that mare foals in that stall, it's going to be freshened up, but we don't like to just swap stalls all the time. That mare and baby is basically going to be assigned to the same stall. And if it changes stalls, that stall will be disinfected before another mare and baby gets put in it, because there's so many things that transfer. And I think you'll find a very strong indication that the healthier your babies are in that first 7 to 10 days strongly helps you with any of your later respiratory issues that you're going to have with most normal babies, meaning your rotococcus or any of your other respiratory issues. The cleaner and safer you can keep them and healthier at this young age, the better off you'll be going into weaning. That's probably our biggest problem, coordinating mares foaling and the 12 hours after nursing with baby check-ins at 12 hours after nursing and collection sometimes gets a little bit hard. But fortunately, everyone on our staff is adaptive enough to be able to do multiple jobs, and they don't mind going from one section of the ranch to the other section of the ranch and pitching in when needed.
So we're coming to the end of our time today, but I have one more question for you for those people who might be looking to step into the breeding farm management role, especially when it comes to the Western industry. Could you just tell those people what skills or experiences you would want them to prioritize developing early on?
Time management would be a very big one, and how to manage your time. Herd management is very, very, very crucial. And being able to see that I need to start this program earlier, not later. And you can't be reactive all the time. You have to be proactive and take that proactive approach. The more programs that you can intern in or work through and develop your own program based on a lot of other programs is always great. I had the opportunity as young in life to manage a large cattle operation. So I learned the ability to manage livestock in general and how they stand up, how they eat, how they act, where they're at, what they're doing tells you more if you stop and listen. The horse can't communicate to you, so you have to stop and listen to what they're showing you on how they act. And that's probably the biggest thing that I could tell anybody is stop and hesitate and see what that horse is trying to tell you, because they will all tell you their story if you allow them.
Yeah, I love that point. I think that's perfect to leave everybody with. So thank you so much for talking with me today. I think our listeners have learned a lot from this discussion.
My pleasure. And I've been looking forward to this.
Thank you all for listening today. Please remember to like this podcast, subscribe, leave a review, and recommend the Stable Management Podcast to a friend.